Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Yes, I'm a Zen Buddhist, and I'm a volunteer in the Florida Department of Corrections, a volunteer chaplain. I've been volunteering at Lake Correctional since about 2009, and I volunteered at Suwannee Correctional, Marion Correctional, and CFRC at various times. So what I want to do today is talk a bit about prison chaplaincy. And in particular, I talk about my relationship with two inmates and some of the emotions that I processed as a result of that. So, and I can't believe that I'm sitting here as a stoic Midwesterner and I'm going to talk about feelings. So some time ago, I received a letter from Dwayne, who was a former inmate at Lake Correctional. And in the postscript, Dwayne asked me, how is Adam doing? So Adam was an inmate that Dwayne had taken in under his wing. He was a younger guy who needed guidance, and Dwayne was providing him with that guidance. Adam really had like two issues in prison. The first was he's really a small guy, like physically small. So it kind of made him a target for the bigger aggressive inmates. But more fundamentally, Adam gripped reality a little differently than the rest of us. And as a result of that, he just constantly had run-ins with other people, run-ins with other inmates, run-ins with corrections officers, run-ins with the prison administration. So he was a frequent visitor to the confinement area, which is like the jail within the prison. And he was also a frequent visitor to the mental health unit. So I'll just do a sidebar on mental health. Lake is one of the prisons that's designated as a mental health prison, a psych for camp, as it's called. What that means is that most of the inmates are under the care of the camp psychiatrist. And for most of those guys, what that means is that once or twice a day, they take a medication. So they show up at the pill window, get their pill. But in every other way, they're just like any other inmate. They're out with the general population. They're in the yard. They sleep in the same dorms and so forth. For those who have more serious issues, however, they're segregated and sent to the mental health unit, where they're, again, segregated from the population and under more intense supervision. So some of these guys are in and out of mental health as their condition warrants. It's usually to get their medication adjusted. There are others that are permanent residents. And it's kind of hard to describe this place. It's like a hell realm right here on Earth. These guys, I mean, some of them are medicated. They're tossed in a cage. And that is where they're going to rot to the day they die. So, in saying that, I don't mean it as an indictment of the Florida Department of Corrections. The reality is, if you're mentally ill, slip through the cracks and go into freefall, a prison mental health unit is where you crash land. Statistically, if you're mentally ill, you are 10 times more likely to end up in prison than in a state psychiatric hospital. So the prison system deserves a lot of criticism in a lot of areas, but it was never designed to be the primary mental health care provider. And for some segments of the population, that's what it's become. So when Dwayne was released, I'll get off my soapbox and I'll get back to the story. When Dwayne was released, he asked me to look out for Adam and kind of visit him when he was locked up. And he made a point of saying, you know, Adam's not faring well in prison. You know, this kid could get himself killed. So I did as Dwayne asked, and I visited Adam anytime I could. Says visits were kind of short by necessity, and unfortunately, the time elapsed between them got longer and longer. So I have a clear recollection of my last visit to see him. I went down to the mental health unit. I kind of paused in front of it, kind of bracing myself for the impact that it has on me. When I got inside, a corrections officer took me to his cell. It was a padded cell. He was completely naked. He had this turban bandage around his head. Because a week before he'd been banging his head against the wall and had taken a half a dozen stitches. There was a corrections officer sitting in front of his cell on a folding chair 24/7 to watch him in case he tried to hurt himself again. He was very embarrassed to be naked, so they brought him a turtle suit. It's like a padded smock that's held on with Velcro straps. The CO unlocked the meal slot, which is this little thin door that you slide the meal tray through. And I knelt and we talked through the meal slot. And we talked about his wound. Parts of the conversation were just rambling and incoherent. And we all danced and prayed. And when I left, I was just depressed and really tired. I mean, I felt more tired from that 15 minutes than like the rest of the day put together. So when I got Dwayne's letter, you know, I felt this like tinge of regret. I hadn't seen Adam in months. And I felt like I'd let him down and let Dwayne down. So I went to the Department of Corrections database, which is accessible on the internet, and did a search on Adam to see where he was, see if I could come visit. I couldn't find him. And I knew something was wrong because he was only like a couple of years into a 7-year sentence. And I remember what Dwayne said about he could get himself killed, so I did a search of Florida obituaries. Of course, that's where I found him. He'd died at a prison up in the Panhandle, an apparent suicide. So when I read that, I just felt these waves of grief. And for me, the grief came in like three basic emotions. One was anger, another was guilt, and the third one was sadness. So I'll kind of talk about each of those. So I start first with the anger. It wasn't necessarily the first thing I felt, but it was the most intense thing that I felt. And I was like angry that he died in prison. In fact, I was angry that he was in prison. So in my mind, I constructed the story around that. It's partially based on fact, but frankly, part of it's my own projection. So in this story, Adam's a young man with psychological issues, commits a series of petty crimes, gets caught, gets a public defender, gets caught up in the three-strike sentencing rules and catches a 7-year sentence. And once he's in prison, the same psychological issues that plagued him on the street plagued him in the prison. And the end result is a guy who's really a serial shoplifter gets what in effect was a death penalty. So with that story kind of feeding my anger, I started gathering information to support my case. Got statistical information about inmate deaths. I did a search of Adam's case, tried to find out as much as I could about his particular case. And I learned a few things about the criminal justice system, and I learned some stuff about myself too. And I guess the first thing I learned was the source of my anger and the source of my suffering was my wish that reality be different than it. I guess that's always the case. One of the interesting things that I learned was that as I started doing the research, my anger started to abate. It is when I got into the research, I somehow transmuted this emotion of anger into something more like an intellectual exercise. I was getting like revved up about social justice, social change. And the anger started to dissipate somewhat. So I don't know if that's the most enlightened way to deal with anger, but in the grand scheme of things, it could have probably done a lot worse. So once the anger was gone, or largely gone, I began to see how it was that I'd been using anger to protect myself from my guilt. So when I was angry, it was all directed outwards. You know, I was pissed at the Department of Corrections. And I was angry at the state of Florida. I was angry at the like the law and order mentality that we have. So by directing that anger outward, you know, I was like looking for someone to blame, put the burden on someone else instead of like looking at myself and my own guilt around this. So the reality is, when I was walking back from mental health that day, I knew I'd never see Adam again. It's not because I had a premonition that he was going to die. Just, I couldn't hack it. And I just realized his reality was harsher than I could bear witness to, much less live it. So, I'm sure some of you remember the movie The Matrix. So there's this scene where Neo's presented with the red pill and the blue pill. And I may have these reversed, but as I recall, the blue pill offered a life of comfortable delusion, whereas the red pill offers a life of uncomfortable reality. So I always thought of myself as like a red pill kind of guy. You know, I want reality, no matter how uncomfortable it is. It's one of the things that attracts me to Zen. But in this case, Adam's reality was just more than I could take. And you know, I gave up. So, you know, again, I guess the source of my suffering in this case is my wish that things be different than they actually are. In this case, I was wishing that I be different than I actually am. I could live up to some idealized image that I had of myself, that I have no faults or weaknesses as a chaplain. So by discontinuing my visits, you know, it may sound like I was accepting my shortcomings, but I don't think it was acceptance. At least in my mind, I make a difference between acceptance and resignation. You know, acceptance is like the full acknowledgement of one's condition in this moment, but it's alive with the possibility of improving in the future, doing it different in the future. Whereas resignation is like accepting one's shortcomings in this moment, but not being willing to do anything about it, or not being able to do anything about it, just kind of giving up, which again, as I feel like is what I did, I just gave up on the situation. So finally, there's the sadness that I felt, and I obviously still feel. So I've shed a lot of tears over Adam, but tears seem like out of proportion to my personal loss. I think what's going on is I've got years and years of loss that I've never acknowledged. It's like this built-up reservoir of tears that it's like Lake Mead. Mm-hmm. You know, and Adam was like the guy who pushed his finger through the Hoover Dam and just all comes pouring out. So, yeah, I guess I allowed myself to feel some loss with Adam, and then just the floodgates open. So that's maybe one of the parts of being a chaplain or a chaplaincy that I underestimated or didn't really acknowledge was the extent to which it would tap into all this unprocessed emotion that I had and kind of make me confront it. So I want to close this with two things, a prayer and a little ritual. So I'll start with the prayer. And in it, I want to acknowledge Adam's life. But also acknowledge the lives of the 5,000 inmates who die in prison every year. It's jails and prisons put together. So, we give thanks for the life of Adam Fuld Green and ask that whatever may come next for him, may he be free of suffering, may he feel safe and still, may he be free of enmity, free of oppression and trouble. May he be at peace. Amen.
Amen.
So if we could, I'm not exactly sure how we're doing this.
So Mike, we spoke about this morning. Mike thought it would be really nice for the group as a whole to offer the option, and this will be your choice, of each of us going up individually to make an incense offering to the altar. And we thought we would do this in silence. So, and maybe we'll just go around the front row like this, and then the second row like this. And your choice to come up or not. If you like, traditionally we bow when we meet the altar, and we're doing charcoal incense. How's that going there?
It's going.
Okay.
I ran out of lighter, but it's okay. Just make sure that you sprinkle it over the part that's lit.
So just take a little piece of the, what is that?
It's myrrh.
A little piece of the myrrh, and traditionally some people like to touch it to their forehead, maybe touch it to the Buddha's third eye, and then place it over the burner, and then as you step away, bow. And you're welcome to do a full bow, or just a standing bow is fine, and we'll take turns like this. And for those that are not in that process, we'll take a meditation posture.
So I better do it right.
We're all watching.